Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 29th day of June, Anno Domini 2019, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Here we go. We talked about this already. Apple is changing iTunes, although what everybody says is getting rid of iTunes. After, 20 years in service, approximately? That announcement left some people confused and worried about what will happen with their music libraries. And scammers, of course, are already taking advantage of that uncertainty. Some iTunes users are getting notices that purport to be from Apple, an email that claimed to be from, and I quote, customer Apple. Open it and you'll read some bad news. As of right now, your account has been locked where you can't do anything. So please click here and you can reset your password and we'll get you all squared away, it said. The link, of course, takes you to a page that looked just like your iTunes main page. The page will ask you to re-enter your information to restore your account. What's interesting is what happens if you actually click on some of the other links on the page first. None of those links work. The only thing you can actually do on that page is put in your ID and password.
I've seen some of those scam emails because your iCloud account is locked, your iTunes account is locked. They've been around for a while. And some of them I've seen, all the other links do work, and they take you to Apple's real page.
Right.
But the one where you log in is fake.
Right. It is a phishing email. The point here, of course, is to steal all of your information. The big thing, of course, is many people have their credit card linked to their Apple ID so they can make purchases, and that would then be vulnerable as well. Here's a reminder, and we've only said this about 6 gazillion times. No reputable company, and that includes Apple, Google, Microsoft, and every other company you can conceivably think of, none of them will ever ask you for your password. Ever.
And they won't call you out of the blue.
And they
most of the time they won't email.
Yeah. Right.
Because there's so many fake ones you can't tell, so the good guys have stopped doing it.
And they don't know whether you're infected or not. And whether you're using it. So
think of the millions of people that Google and Facebook and Apple would have to hire in order to call every user that might have a problem.
Yeah.
Hey, job opportunities.
Yes, and by the way, Apple has said, I don't know if we can reiterate this enough because I get a lot of questions about it. Apple has said no one will lose any purchased iTunes songs when iTunes changes to the new Apple Music app. You'll also keep all of your playlists, including your smart playlists. You'll also keep all of your iTunes gift cards and iTunes credits. Movies and TV shows you've purchased will be moved to the Apple TV app. Podcasts you subscribe to or added to iTunes will all be available in the Apple Podcast app. And all of your audiobooks will be in the Apple Books app. So remain calm.
Syncing services, if you still need to physically sync your iPod or iPhone over a USB cable, will be available now in the Finder on the desktop.
Directly,
yeah. So everything is still there. They're just splitting it out. And they actually made fun of themselves because we've been saying for years. So iTunes started out playing music. And then they added the music store, and they added the TV store, then they added the app store, then they added the bookstore, then they added this, and they added that, and it's just beginning too big and bloated over the last 20 years. So on stage, when they were talking about this, he said, well, people have been excited about this, so we're going to add email into iTunes, and we're going to add web browsing into iTunes. And there was a shocked silence in the crowd. No. We're breaking it up. You know, music and movies and podcasts are now going to be separate apps, like they already are on the iPhone and iPad.
Right. Exactly. They're just making it the same on the computer as it is everywhere else already.
Yeah.
So That's that. And by the way, have you been hit by a scammer? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Most scams are pretty good these days.
And the thing of it is, though, is if you, which we've said for years, if you have to stop and think about it for a moment, erase it.
The problem is people don't sometimes stop and think about it.
And the bad guys are good at scaring you. I had a customer this week get a phone call from Google saying there was a problem in her Gmail account. And she was at work, and work doesn't use Gmail. And she let them into their computer because he said that he was from Google.
Yeah.
And then, then when he asked for the credit card number, they got a little nervous and called us.
Yeah.
Well, at least they called you at some point. Yeah. That's the important thing. But yeah, no company like that is ever going to call you. They honestly don't care. If you call them, they might help you, but they're not going to call you. They just aren't.
Uh-huh.
Get over that immediately. Absolutely be aware that. But the other problem is, of course, you know, there you are. You're sitting around. You got an adult beverage, you got your slippers on, you're wearing pants, maybe not. And then this thing comes, you're relaxed, you're happy, guard is down.
You're safe in your own house.
You're safe in your own house.
I had a scam happen to me just this past week. I was posting some stuff on Craigslist, okay? So I happen to have this item up there, and bam, all of a sudden I get a hit. Guy says, I'm very interested in it. Could I give you a check? Have it cleared, and then I'll come and get it. I'm thinking, yeah, that'll work. That's all right. I figure he's going to drop it off, let it clear. Then all of a sudden, he writes back, okay, well, I'm going to have this moving company come over and drop off the check because I'm in the service over here and blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking.
Red flag.
Fish.
Yeah. Yeah.
Big fish.
Yeah, that's another common one. They send you a check for too much, and then just have you refund them the difference.
Yeah.
And by the time the check bounces at your bank, it's too late.
Yeah, I go, yeah, no, I just deleted it. And if he really wants to come and get it, he can bring the cash, and then we'll talk business.
Yep.
But, you know, it's fun to string them on. That's the whole thing of it. I know a lot of folks, you know, they think we're nuts. But because we have fun doing this stuff,
we have fun doing it.
You know, it's just like when they the robocalls, because you know I'll get them during the day and I'll go Jazz 90.1,
yeah,
click. I love it.
I know a guy that you've done it too. You're the 27th caller. You've won the fabulous vacation to the Thousand Island. And all I need is your name and number and a $500 security deposit.
Right.
Yeah, you just turn it around back on him. And, you know, the best one is that guy, there's a YouTube on it, that he sat there and he had this gentleman trying to say that he's in trouble. And he goes, oh, you're sending me the blue one? But I ordered the green one. You know, and he kept him on the line, I think it was for over close to 10 minutes. And then he finally busted him. And, of course, the guy goes irate. He goes, well, at least I held you up for 10 minutes, and you're not going to scam these other people, you worthless thing. You know, trying to scam innocent people out of their hard-earned money, telling them that their accounts are in trouble, and you want gift cards. Nobody takes gift cards, dip.
Yep. I got one day that said, your child is in jail. First, you would know whether my child is male or female.
Yep.
Secondly, I was sitting on the couch next to my child. So,
well, wait a minute. Let's back up here, folks.
It's the one you don't know about.
The Secret Life of Nick Francesco.
Yeah. Right. So I said,
how many childs do you have out wandering around from your previous life?
Yeah, right. And of course, it starts off with, this is Sheriff so-and-so of the such-and-such police and blah, blah, blah. And I said, oh, well, what's the problem? Because I'll listen to the next sentence.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we have your child in jail. You do. Yes. Your child's in jail. And it was clear he was trying to get me to say whether my child was male or female. To hear a he or a she so he could get closer to the
scene. See, that's when you should have said, what child?
Right.
Ask him their name.
Yeah, yeah. I said, I'm my child is in jail? He said, yes. I said, what did my child do? Now, he's stuck.
Yeah.
Right? Because he can either say, he's got to play the construct game. Your child did. You can't say he did or she did.
Right.
Because it could be very wrong.
Yeah.
Well, your child committed a felony. Really? What was the felony? And I don't remember where we went, but we went on and on and on. And I said, well, I'm going to beat my child senseless when I get that kid home. By this point, my daughter's looking at me like, what the? And I finally said, hold on. Let me let you talk to my child yourself. And I handed Amelia the phone. I said, it's for you.
You wasted your one phone call.
But that's, you know, those are pretty common as well. You know, your grandchild's in Ireland and needs you to send a money order. Those kind of scams happen.
Got mugged at the airport and lost their passport.
Right. So those are the kind of things that we see all the time, and you need to be a little careful.
And we're starting to see vendors are now warning people when they're trying to buy too many gift certificates or too many gift cards. And we had a gentleman come into our store trying to ask if we would buy back $5,000 worth of iTunes cards he bought at other stores. Because that was the ransom for his kidnapped grandchild that turned out to be fake. So he went and bought $5,000 worth of iTunes cards and read the number off the back. So, no, most stores won't take back gift cards.
Right.
Because they can't be sure you didn't read the number off the back.
Right. And if you did read the number off the back, they're no good anymore.
Yeah, the money's gone anyway, yeah.
Right.
So we've been hearing a lot of vendors. We've had a few times where people come in wanting to buy too many gift cards. You said, are you sure this is real? No, I just have five children. All right, that's okay.
But yeah, right. But, right, if you're going to buy five $50 gift cards for Christmas, I get that. Yeah. I've done that.
Mm-hmm.
But the other one, no. What I tell people to do is if somebody calls you and says your grandchild or your son or your daughter, whatever, is in jail, say, oh my God, let me put you on hold while I get my wallet. Put them on hold, call the kid.
Mm-hmm.
When the kid answers and says, hi, Grandma, where are you? I'm sitting in my living room. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get arrested? No. Okay. Click and then click. You know, just do it.
Yep.
All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Hi, guys. First of all, happy 4th of July to one and all.
You too?
Because that's coming up. Noticed something kind of unusual. I have on my Windows box, I have Avast. I have Super Anti-Spyware, and I have Malware Bytes. Every time, because I don't leave the computer on, I manually run Malware Bytes every time I start the machine. With an SSD drive, it takes a whole minute and a half.
Yeah.
So it's not a big deal. I'm running it, and not every time, but periodically while it's running, Super Anti-Spyware pops up and says a startup item has been added.
Uh-huh.
And I'm looking at this going, all right. And the first couple times it happened, they didn't draw a link between the fact that I was running Malware Bytes. I just figured Super Anti-Spyware had tripped to something. So I get done with Malware Bytes. I go out. I run a full scan with Super Anti-Spyware. I also go out and manually check my startup items. There's nothing there that wasn't there, and Super Anti-Spyware doesn't find anything other than tracking cookies, 700+, which is what it usually finds. They delete those all out and go back, and I can't find anything. Machine performance is fine. Hard drive sizes didn't jump up or do anything silly. So it's like, okay. About the third or fourth time, it's not every time, but it happens here and there. And about the third or fourth time, all of a sudden the light bulb went on in the back of my head. Wait a minute. This has happened every time I'm running Malware Bytes. Is there some kind of a connect? Are you aware, I should phrase that, of any kind of this happening, or have you heard of this happening?
I've heard of it happening with super anti-spyware.
Well, I have seen before, malware bytes yes. put a startup item in if it has to restart
right.
after cleaning, because then it wants to run again immediately. But if it doesn't find anything, it shouldn't need to do that. But right. maybe, yeah, so maybe never, it's temporarily I've putting one in.
To be honest, I've never had super anti-spyware find anything.
Well, this is malware bytes.
I haven't had malware. I misspoke. I'm sorry. I haven't had malware bytes find anything. Super anti-spyware always finds tracking cookies, but malware bytes has never found anything. I've been very fortunate. That's a good thing, actually. But
yeah, you may.
They do look for different things, so it's not a bad idea. To have them both.
Right.
But have them both running simultaneously, they're probably conflicting. One is seeing the other doing something and trying to stop it inadvertently. Mm-hmm. In fact, I had one when I was cleaning that machine I mentioned earlier. The LCAR virus sample file popped up, and Super Anti-Spyware wanted to clean it. And it says right in it, this is not a virus. Which, of course, every virus would do.
Right. But, yeah, I've seen people have a problem with it. It seems to be a temporary glitch that should be fixed in the next update. I have seen that before, particularly with Super Anti-Spyware, but it seems to be caused mainly by malware bytes.
Okay. So this is an added feature, I guess.
Yes, it's an added feature.
Whether I want it or not, yes. Okay. That all right, as long as this is something you've heard of because my panic was that okay, I've done everything I can do, and I'm not finding anything. So what the heck kind of a startup item's been added? Because I'm not seeing anything.
Yeah, it's essentially a glitch. One thing you can do is under the real-time protection page of Super Anti-Spyware, you can uncheck the box that says notify me when a startup item is added. That sounds like a dumb thing to do, but in fact, all the new installs of Super Anti-Spyware 8 actually have that option unchecked by default. Apparently, it's caused an issue that Super Anti-Spyware has decided to simply ignore.
Interesting. I bought a license. That one and Malwarebytes I bought licenses for, and I do get all the updates automatically, and it tells me when there's new versions and whatnot. So maybe I should go out and check and see if I'm behind a version or something.
Yeah, I think the newest one is 8.
Okay.
I think.
Well, I can check that. Next time I log in, I'll take a trip out and to the site and say, send me the newest update.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
All righty.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Did you see the thing in the news? I'm sure you did. Where an Apple Watch saved the paddleboarder's life because it noticed he was having a...
I didn't see that one, but I've seen those before. The Apple Watch can read your heart rate, and it's getting better. And speaking of which, it's getting better and better at noticing arrhythmia, changes in
right.
your heart rhythm. And they have started adding that now as a feature that it will warn you if something weird is happening to your heart rate and warn you that you might want to talk to a doctor. Either too high or too low, or some people have actually turned out to have atrial fibrillation, and the changes in your heart rate can indicate problems like that. So it's kind of nice that they're able to find things like that.
Right, and that's essentially what happened here. The woman was it was a woman who was paddleboarding off of Nahant Beach. This is a little different. She was paddleboarding, and the wind started to blow her out to sea, and the wind became too much for her, so she used her Apple Watch to call 911.
Yep.
And the Lynn, Massachusetts, I think fire department, came out and got her. So yeah, it was, you know, you can make, and that, you know, you see all these things where the next version of your watch also has a cellular chip in it.
Yeah.
So you can make cell calls. This is the only time I've thought of that would be useful.
Well, yeah, because people say, well, I have my phone with me all the time. Well, maybe not when you're on a paddleboard.
Right.
In fact, when they announced this feature, that's this picture. Yeah. That's an Apple executive standing on the paddleboard out in the middle of some bay somewhere. So actually, that's probably the pond in the center of the Apple campus.
Yeah, probably.
Staged.
Making her phone call over cellular on the watch, just, you know, to show how it could be done. And so there's the guy standing there.
Yeah.
And, but that's, what, a 100-foot screen?
Yeah.
100-foot movie screen they have in this theater.
Yeah, and that's probably the little one.
Yeah.
The rumor, now I don't, you listen, folks, we rarely talk about rumors for any device on this show because rumors run rampant. Everything from the next version of the iPhone will do your dishes. I don't pay any attention to those, but they say the next version of the Apple Watch will have a camera in it.
It has a shutter control. There's a camera app on there now that you use as a shutter control for your phone, so you can take remote selfies.
Right. But now they're saying the next, it's just one of many thousands of rumors.
Yeah.
You know, there's also the rumor that it'll find you a date and it'll do everything else. But,
well, it's got Tinder.
It's got Tinder. Good to know. Now you've got a camera for Tinder.
Yeah.
No, this is what I really look like. Click. But yeah, so they say the next version will have a camera, which is interesting. I don't necessarily know that. First, I don't need yet one more cell bill.
Yeah.
So I don't need a, but that's just me. I don't need a, I suppose you could leave your phone home.
But it's only $10 a month for this one and that one and the other one. And,
yeah,
and
exactly.
Suddenly it's a lot of money.
Cumulative.
It's $120 a year.
$10 a month doesn't sound like much.
No. It's $120 a year.
That's a lot.
What could I do with $120 that isn't this?
Yeah.
Exactly.
And how often are you going to use it?
That's right.
That's the other thing. You're paying that $10. How many times are you going to actually use it?
Right.
I mean, granted, like anything else, you know, the novelty will soon wear off. That's like, you know, and then people forget to cancel.
Yes. When I'm swimming, I won't have my phone on me.
You think?
But that's, you know, when maybe in the sauna, but you know, pretty much my phone is with me 24/7. So I don't know how useful that is.
And if it's not, you probably don't want to be contacted.
That's exactly right. If my phone's not with me, I'm off the grid. Thank you. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I think I'm still Dave.
Maybe.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites.
You think I was new at that.
You sounded more like Scooby-Doo there for a minute.
Yeah, really.
Ruh-roh, Reggie.
Oh, did you see that one? They had a relate, and of course I could relate to it. They had Wimpy, cartoon.
Yeah, yeah.
And they had certain characters around Wimpy.
I'll gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today.
Right. It's Tuesday. Yeah.
So they put a caption underneath it. Not many young kids will know what this means. And I'm thinking, you know what? 90% of the kids out there.
All the other, all the other hamburger mascots.
Wouldn't have
the clown, the royalty, the guy in the cardboard container.
Yeah. Exactly.
No trademark infringement implied.
Right.
Oh,
an ongoing operation that's in. So pay attention to this, people. an ongoing operation that's installing ransomware and other malware on the computers of unsuspecting website visitors is one of the most potent drive-by attack campaigns researchers have seen in recent memory. The attacks install three pieces of malware using an exploit kit called Green Flash Sundown, which researchers identified in 2015 and have continued to follow since. Attacks in recent weeks have spiked again as Shadowgate, one of the names given to the hacker group behind the campaign, has unleashed a highly revamped version of the exploit kit on hacked ad servers run by web publishers. The most notable compromise is of an ad server belonging to OnlineVideoConverter.com, a site with more than 200 million visitors a month that converts YouTube videos into video files that can be stored on a computer hard drive. I just use YouTube-DL on my Linux box. They are ongoing and with a scale that we haven't seen in a couple of years when it comes to exploit kit-related attacks, says Jerome Segura, who's a malware bytes researcher tracking the campaign. Given what we see in our telemetry, this is the most successful drive-by campaign we have seen in quite a while, so we can infer many people were affected by it. Segura reported the revived campaign on Wednesday in a post that said the attacks were one of the first time the attackers had actively targeted people in Europe and North America. Previously, the group had largely limited attacks to South Korea. In an analysis published Thursday, researchers from Trend Micro echoed the assessment that the new campaign represents a significant escalation by the once regional group. The best way to protect against this campaign is to be sure to keep browsers, browser add-ons, and operating systems updated, like I just did with my Chromebook. Since the attacks this group is known to use almost always exploit known vulnerabilities for which patches are available. Antivirus protection is also effective if it's running in the background all the time, since most engines detect both the exploits and the payloads. Additionally, it's always an excellent idea to uninstall standalone versions of Flash. The exploits are currently targeting only Windows computers that run outdated versions of Adobe's Flash Media Player. Segura said visitors who have been infected will know immediately the ransomware payload is the indication that you were infected. It pops up a ransom note, and indeed, all your files are encrypted. The best way to defeat ransomware is to have an off-site backup. The best way to defeat ransomware is to have an off-site backup.
You think?
How's your backup situation? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
I just read an article. I'm trying to find it again about a city. Might have been Baltimore that was shut down for weeks because of ransomware, and they've apparently spent millions of dollars in tech support and forensic recovery and whatnot, and I think the ransom was $50,000.
Yep. Well, and that's why. They make it a fairly inexpensive amount of money, comparatively,
to get
your stuff back. The problem is half the time you don't get your stuff back.
Yeah.
In fact, most of the time you don't get your stuff back. You give them the $15,000, they're gone. So they don't care anymore.
They're hit and run.
New estimates from Baltimore are $10 to $18 million it's going to cost the city to recover from.
And let me just say that whoever their system administrator is should be fired.
Yep, here's Atlanta spent $2 million to recover from a $50,000 ransom.
Again, somebody needs to be fired. If you're not making constant regular
backups.
Secure backups, you're doing something very, very, very wrong.
And they have to be disconnected from your main drive because of somebody. So most of these ransomware attacks are from an employee clicking on something they shouldn't have clicked on that then gets into the system and affects everybody's computers and any connected drive.
Yep.
So if your backup drives are always connected, they're going to get infected too. So you need a disconnected offsite drive.
Right.
And you lose a day's worth of work if we go to yesterday's backup.
That's my point. You
better than losing it all.
Right. Yeah. You cannot prevent your system from being hacked that way. I mean, if it happens, it happens. And if it happens to all your backups, it happens to those backups. But if you've got an off-site backup and you back up every single day, the most you will lose is one day's work. Mm. You reinstall Windows. Wow. You reinstall all your data. You're done. You're on your way. Now, on Windows, it's harder because you have to reinstall all your software and everything else. Linux is very easy. Chromebooks don't get infected, but if they did, it would be very easy. But I admit that, and Macs would be the same way. It's hard. Well, it's a little easier on Macs because they don't have a registry.
Right. But it's the actual real ransomware is very small. It's the fake ransomware notice where then you call them and...
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's more common.
I just had one question pop up, guys. It says, is there a new process for locating and downloading your podcast? I haven't been able to locate the podcast for the last couple of weeks' shows.
Yeah. Something changed somewhere, and we haven't figured out what it is.
iTunes says that we are not doing byte-level something.
Well, that one's fixed now.
Well, that is fixed now.
According to the validator, that's now working.
Yeah, that's always been working.
Except that it took 1.4 seconds to get to the feed.
Yes, yeah. It did take 1.4 seconds to get to the feed.
And when
Slackers.
Yeah. When I check the... I'm trying to find the help page. When I check the Apple podcast validator, one of these links here, it said everything was fine, and it shows all of the podcasts that aren't in the feed. The one thing that's weird is it's substituting a hex code, 8211. You know what that is? That's the hyphen you put between the name and the state. Why is it substituting a hex code for that? But it always has been.
Yeah. So that's okay. That's just weird.
So in the Apple podcast setup stuff, it shows those episodes, but the duration is all 0 seconds, which is confusing too.
But it's for all of them, including.
But it shows the three that are missing. Some reason it stopped after June 1st, and we're trying to figure it out.
So the short answer is we don't know. The long answer is we really don't know.
Well, and
it's
there
a work in progress.
You can go to the archive page on the main Soundbites website.
Right.
There is a link for the archives to download them manually. And it's called Archives. I'm trying to find it.
It's down under...
On the right-hand side.
On the right-hand side. Hello. What did I just do? I don't know. It's on the right-hand side under...
The full audio archives.
Yeah, under fascinating stuff. So on the far right at the top is our longevity. It tells you how long we've been on the air. 3 months away from, almost 2 months away from our 30th anniversary. And then there's call us, and farther down there's please help, where you can donate to Soundbites directly. Then it's search posts, and then fascinating stuff. And the second thing down is the full audio archives. And if you click on that, you will see all 600,000, I think it is at this point, shows, including last week's and the week before and the week before that. So you can get at them. It's just that Apple, who says our podcast feed is good, is not doing it because the podcast feed is bad.
Yeah.
I can't give you a better answer than that.
It also looks like, there was a change in our podcast software. It looks like they have added SoundCloud and Google Play and some of the other podcast services, so we can add our streams there too. And I'm going to look into doing that.
Good. So we'll see those coming up shortly. Yes, the software works, the podcasts work, everything works except Apple doesn't think they work. And I wish we had a better answer for you than that. There you are. I don't know what else to say. One of the things that they said was that our byte markings, you should be able to, I forget exactly how they phrase it, but the basic idea is you should be able to enter the podcast at any byte in the 2 hour length, because that means if they pause it to restart, you have to be able to say restart at byte 320 or whatever.
Okay.
And they originally said that's what didn't work.
And now
but that
does.
Works perfectly. And has always worked perfectly. And now it's byte, what is it called? Byte range. Byte range support. That's what they call it. And it works perfectly. And there are tests that you can perform at the system level.
The byte level?
At the byte level. To do that, they all tell me it's fine. I can do tests from my Linux box. They all tell me it's fine. So it's all fine until you get to Apple, who says... Yeah, it works perfectly, and it's broken. Nah, can't be both.
Yeah.
Can't be both. We don't know what to do at this point, and I apologize. I wish I had a better answer for you then we don't know. But we're also, we are going to add them to other services so that you will have a better chance of getting it from somebody who thinks that they work perfectly and they're not broken. Which are apparently two different things to Apple. So I don't know. I don't know what to say at this point. I really don't. I'm sorry. Steve's going to look now.
We're working on it.
We're working on
it. It's a work in progress.
It's a work in progress.
We can't help it. I mean,
but as always, you can get them from the Soundbites website, which is at soundbites.org/archives. So it's not that hard to find. And they're all there going all the way back to 2001. Wow.
I was figuring out. We've done figuring on, say, an average of 50 weeks.
Yeah,
50 shows a year.
50 shows a year.
That's 1,500 shows.
Yep.
Coming up. That we've done.
Yep.
There's 912 files in that folder.
So that's most of the shows. A
couple of them are the XML files and whatnot, but so over 900 podcasts listed on that page.
Listed, and right. That's, as Dave said, there's a lot more of them that we never didn't have in those
back
days.
Back in our first days when we were out. Right. I wish I knew where they went. I used to have easily 3 or 4 years of shows on tape that Laura used to tape for me.
If you have them, if you can find them, get them.
I wish I
onto
could.
Files, and I'll put them on the.
If I could, yeah. It's just one of those things when we moved from our condo to the house. You know, we had that one flood downstairs. It was actually when we moved from Roby over to where I am now. And we had stuff out in the garage and a heavy rain. And we found out after the fact.
The garage was not waterproof.
Yeah, that gets flooded bad.
Yeah.
Boxes were all over the place and all that. And we wound up losing so much stuff.
Yeah, yeah, we've seen that. We've had that happen to us, too. So at any rate, long story.
Longer.
You can get to the full audio archives. You can also get to our YouTube channel and the video archive from that same page. Obviously, a different link, but you can get to that page as well. YouTube is streaming live right now. 19 people are watching it, so it's easy enough to get to, easy enough to find, and easy enough to see old shows. All right, and back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Hey, you heard you talking about the ransomware and backup. And I remember we were talking about Acronis last week?
Yeah.
Okay, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago. I can't remember. But they have a built-in self-defense for ransomware.
Oh, really?
Which I thought was kind of neat, yep. It detects behavior heuristics, machine learning-based stack anomaly detection, and entropy analysis for cyber-like ransomware. And if you go in, it tells you how it defends itself against, because I guess a lot of ransomware will attack your backup.
Yes, software. It will.
It will attack your backup software, then corrupt your backup.
Yep.
So this is one that tries to counteract it.
Nice. Very nice.
So one of the things I've been loving this program. This is the free version. I think I'm going to buy it.
Well, and that's something that we often encourage. You know, if you have a choice to buy something that you've been using for free and love, you should, because that encourages them to continue to build it and make it better and better.
So I just wanted to pass that along because I thought that was a great. I just learned this week, a matter of fact, looking at why there was a icon in my system tray that said Acronis Active Protection. And I clicked on it and I read all this information about how it protects itself as best it can from ransomware.
Sure, sure. Excellent.
Okay.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, guys.
Yep. Yeah, and whatever you do, just, you know, make a backup and then disconnect that backup. Those of you who are into batch programming or bash programming or whatever your operating system is, what do they call it on a Mac?
pretty much the Time Machine is the automatic program.
No, but I'm saying if you can create a file that will connect to a service, back up all your stuff, and disconnect. And on Windows, you would put that in a batch file. On Linux, you would put
your startup folder.
Startup folder, just put an item in your startup
folder.
It's
too simple.
Right. but you can do that sort of thing actually fairly well. Oh, look, a new icon. Very cool with the upgrade.
Nice.
I have to admit that during our last break, I upgraded my Chromebook. And you say, you upgraded your Chromebook in 3 minutes? No, I upgraded my Chromebook in about 20 seconds. Because
mm-hmm.
it downloaded the update in the back.
It just
I rebooted in about 5 seconds to shut down, 8 seconds to boot up.
That means when I get home,
yours will be updated.
It'll be updated because I was using it last night. It just sits there and
yep,
automatically.
This may be the last update I get for this machine. It is over 5 years old. They said it would go out of service after 5 years. That's this month.
Yeah, so this may be the last wonder, one. You know, how much they're going to...
I don't know. We'll see. I didn't honestly think I was going to get one this month, but I did, and we'll see what happens. But I'm looking at the new ones coming up because the new ones will run. I think I'm waiting till at least September, if not Christmas. The new ones will run Android apps, which this one will not.
Oh, mine does.
And right, and the next versions will also run Linux programs. Now I'm drooling just a little bit. So we'll see. That excites me.
Well, I just found out that, you know, with my ham, some of the software, there are a number of these programs that I use now are also doing the Chrome app. And one that I'm very interested in, it's like, really?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that would be cool, be able to... And then take the Chromebook where I want and still, you know, if I had the radio on, still be doing stuff.
Right.
And it's like, sweet.
Yep. Yep.
And not have to, again, not have to worry about the viruses, spyware, malware, or anything else.
That's right.
Because, you know, I...
There for me...
Like not having the issue that I have to worry
right.
about, you know, oh, is this site going to get infected? Oh. Everything else, no.
Right. For me, there are maybe three programs. Two definitely, maybe three programs that I can't do on the Chromebook that I can do on my Linux box.
Mm-hmm.
None of those programs are something I need to do outside my home. They're all things that I do just at home.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't need really to run Linux on a Chromebook. And it does, and those are things that I only do irregularly. But the stuff that I do every day, the everything I do, I can do on a Chromebook, and it's easier and faster and, as you said, much, much safer than running on anything else. So it depends on what you do. And it depends on how you do it. Like I said, I've written books on a Chromebook. That was simple and easy. The one thing I can't do is, one of the things I can't do is check my ebooks. I use a program called Calibre, spelled the British way, C-A-L-I-B-R-E.
Calibre.
Calibre, but it's Calibre. And with that, I can read and check and even convert any ebook to any other ebook. And that does not obviously run on a Chromebook. It runs on Mac and Windows and Linux. But that'll run on Linux in the next version.
Well, that's why, like I told you, you know, I've got my Chromebook upstairs in the ham room, and I'm running my ham software on a Windows 7 machine because it doesn't have to tie to the internet.
Right.
It ties to the ham radios.
Right.
So I don't have to worry about viruses or anything else unless they're starting to send viruses over the wire, which I don't think they're going to do.
No.
So, you know, I'm safe there.
Right.
And like I say, the internet is on my Chromebook. I can do all my emails and everything else, and I don't have to worry. I don't even give it a second thought on my Chromebook Because they just don't get viruses. And if I get spoofed, like you did that one day here, I'll still never forget that. I've told a number of folks that story. I said, yeah, we're in the middle of this, you know, doing the show. Nick's on his Chromebook, and all of a sudden he gets his warning. He's got a Windows virus. Yeah. It's like, really?
Yeah. It's the same one that many people have seen and many people have fallen for. Big red notice taking over the whole screen that says your Windows system is infected.
They're playing klaxons now, and the voice comes out and tells you things now.
Yep. And I thought to myself, I have a Windows virus on a Chromebook? No.
That'd be cool.
That would be kind of cool.
I'd like to see how they did that.
I could probably go on the television circuit.
You could make some serious money on that one.
But yeah, so I don't worry about viruses. I don't worry about any of that stuff. When I'm out in public, particularly if I'm like the traditional sitting in a coffee shop writing.
You out in public?
What?
You go out in public? Your wife lets you go out in public?
She rarely does. She rarely does.
Keeps them on a short leash.
I have a disguise.
Ah.
It's a beard. it's a black beard.
A little trimmed, I think.
Thank you, yes.
Yes, you did just, a couple weeks ago.
Just when you thought I couldn't get any sexier.
You trimmed it 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I did. I did trim it 2 weeks ago.
I've had three appointments postponed. so mine's getting a little. I was teasing my wife Shirley that I should you know little
braid
a beard tail.
My daughter was very young, one Saturday morning, she decided to braid my beard. Of course, I let her because I'm her dad. Of course, I did. And of course, no sooner was she done than my wife called and said, "I need you to bring some stuff to market." Okay.
There's a TV commercial running now where a little girl is painting dad's face and the doorbell rings and she goes, "I'm not done yet." and he can't. So it's for one of those doorbell cameras.
I've been there. I have been done the makeup. I have done the everything. Yeah. All right. That music tells us you've wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense. But ho, guess what? We're not done. We're going to just take a slightly longer break, a little bio break, and then we'll be back in just a few more minutes with a whole nother hour of Dave Enright. Well, not a whole hour of Dave Enright, so don't go away. Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. We are delighted that you are continuing to listen to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member supported. Good news, we made up our shortfall, so we're good for another few weeks, and we'll be back very shortly. Don't go away.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's CGI Rochester International Jazz Festival, Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites. Right here on the Truly Great and Truly Grateful to You that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. I look at this. I look at Steve's laptop and I get angry.
Why?
I did an online seminar. This week for some people about how to get their book published on Amazon, and I wanted to use OBS, the open broadcast system that Steve uses, OBS Studio, and I rehearsed with it twice. It was great. I figured out what everything I wanted to do. Went to use it on the night. Wouldn't do a thing. Couldn't get it to work.
Isn't that always the way?
Porked me off like you wouldn't believe.
But yet, you go back home and...
I'll guarantee it'll work fine today.
Yeah.
It'll work perfectly today. There's no question of
that
in my mind.
That when you really, absolutely, positively needed it...
Yeah. Is exactly what happened. That is exactly right. All right, another new...
Bit the bullet.
Yeah. Oh, here's an issue that many of you actually have been writing about recently. Microsoft has fessed up to a... This already it's an unusual...
Wait a minute, should I be sitting?
Yeah, it's already an unusual start to this. Microsoft has fessed up to a bug in the Windows 10 1809 USB Type-C connector system software interface, or USCI. Which can cause the operating system to shut down slowly. The bug is triggered if you decide to pop in or yank out a USB-C peripheral, charger, or some other device when the machine you're using is powering down or going into sleep mode. Doing that on an affected machine will cause it to take 60 seconds longer to shut down or sleep. That's hardly the most devastating bug Microsoft has ever had. And Microsoft did note that it won't screw up any other USB-C functions. Apart from the extra 1 minute of sleep or shutdown process takes in this circumstance, this bug does not affect the normal functionality of USB Type-C on your machine, Microsoft said. The system and the USB-C ports should continue to function properly after the next wake or restart of the system. While a minute might not seem a long time, despite the protestations of some, when one is working on the move and needs to quickly pack up a laptop so they can hop off a train, for example, or at the end of class when the next professor is trying to get in and set their stuff up, a whole 60 seconds can seem like quite a drag. It's also disconcerting when a computer takes a long time to shut down as well, given that you don't know if it's suddenly going to throw up a blue screen of death or just die or burst into flame or who knows what's going to happen. Thankfully, for those USB-C gadget-toting types in a hurry, the bug doesn't affect the latest version of Windows 10. So if your system is running a version of the operating system that's newer than version 1809, you have nothing to really worry about. The bug will more likely affect organizations with Windows 10 machines that need to be manually updated, but IT types with a good patching process should be able to avoid this problem, not that it's likely to cause many issues, just an annoyance. So you can find out which version of Windows you're running by holding down the Win key, that's generally between the Control and Alt keys, the Win key, and then typing R, that brings up a box where you can run a program, and then you type WinVer, which is short for Windows Version, W-I-N-V-E-R. And it will tell you all about what you're running and what version of Windows you're on. If it's 1809, you might have this problem. Not a problem, this annoyance. If not, you don't have to worry about it. So which version of Windows are you running? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
I wonder if that was related to the bug that caused... Windows to delete all your files during the 1809 upgrade if you had a USB drive connected.
Oh, very possible.
Yeah.
Very, very possible. Yeah, absolutely. Interesting thought.
So for a while it was deleting all your files, and then they put out a warning in the installer that it wouldn't install if you had a USB drive connected.
Right.
And hopefully they have fixed that by now.
You would certainly hope so, but only version 1809, and they're not... doing much to update version 1809, to be utterly honest.
1903 is out.
Right.
You might want to hold off on it. They still haven't fixed 1809.
Right. But that's just one more symptom of Microsoft doing less. They don't want you on 1809. They want you on 1903. So there are certain things they're just not going to bother to fix in 1809. Get over it.
I'm on 18F132.
Oh, nice. Very good.
Yeah.
I'm on... hold on. I can tell you that in a minute.
Everyone's scrambling for their terminal modes?
Everyone's scrambling for the terminal modes? I'm just clicking about Chrome OS.
Yeah.
I'm on 75.0.3770.102 official build, 64-bit.
Nice.
As of half an hour ago, which is when I rebooted. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed, all the way from Pennsylvania. What's up, Ed?
Hi there, guys. I enjoy your program. Say, I have a Samsung Galaxy Tab 3 that I bought. It's a 10-inch model that I bought in early 2014, and I use it mainly for surfing the web. Now, a number of times, if I go to a site, I'll get this on the screen. Connection problem. Couldn't establish a secure connection. Okay. Now, I can get on sites with my other computers. I have Windows 7 computers, so it's not a problem, you know, as far as actual connection, like with my router. And if I also get the message, web page not available. The web page at yada yada might be temporarily down or may have moved to a new address. And it hasn't. So I'm wondering what the problem is. Now, I've been using the browser that comes with the Samsung. It's just called Internet. I downloaded Firefox a couple of days ago. I thought maybe I could, you know, use a different browser. And anytime that I bring up that Firefox, after about 5 seconds, I get, unfortunately, Firefox has stopped. Okay. So.
Yeah. No, it's not. Yeah.
Okay. So. You're normally using Firefox or. The old Android browser?
I was using the old Android browser,
yeah.
You know, from the get-go, and I just started getting more and more annoyed with this problem. So then I tried the Firefox just about a week ago, and that, like I said, never works for more than a few seconds before it says, unfortunately, Firefox has stopped.
Yeah. What I might suggest, well, part of the problem is the Galaxy Tab 3 is on an older version of Android. I think it's 7.1, maybe.
Uh-huh.
I have a Galaxy Tab 3, thanks to Dave, and it is on 7.1. I don't believe it's updatable from that point on. But what I have discovered is that the only browser that works reliably with it is Google Chrome.
Uh-huh. But doesn't it take up a lot of memory? I've heard that about a Chrome browser.
It reserves a lot of memory. But if you load something else, it gives it back.
Uh-huh.
Mostly. Any browser that you have a lot of tabs open in is going to take a lot of memory. And in fact, Chrome takes less memory than the old Android browser.
Really?
Yeah. So, it does take a significant amount of memory because it does a lot of tricks to make the web faster. It downloads the next page if you're looking at a sequence.
Uh-huh.
And it can figure out what the next page is. It downloads that in the background so you get it faster. That obviously takes up more memory, et cetera, et cetera. But, it seems to be you're having two issues. One is that the Android browser is definitely old and no longer updated. And
uh-huh.
It just doesn't do some stuff well. The Firefox browser is updated and new, but does not work well with old versions of Android.
Yeah, that's certainly the case here.
Yeah.
I guess I should just uninstall the Firefox then.
It probably wouldn't hurt to uninstall it. You're not really going to be able to use it anyway. And install Google Chrome instead.
Okay, and now one other last question for you. I noticed that the battery apparently doesn't seem to hold a charge. Like, I would charge it to 100%,
mm-hmm.
and I made sure that, you know, I did turn it off. And when I started it up today, I noticed that it's at 34%. So I'm wondering if it's just the battery's just going bad. It just apparently isn't holding a charge. It doesn't seem to me that, you know, it's turning on accidentally, because whenever I started up like I did today, I definitely had to turn it on. It wasn't already on. So is bad battery going bad, I guess?
Yeah, that's what's happening. The problem with these things, let's face Ooh. It, that was Galaxy Tab 3 came out in 2013.
Uh-huh.
So it's essentially a six-year-old battery.
Uh-huh.
And
expected.
It's expected.
And a weak battery can cause problems with the system date and time, which can cause websites to not work because your clock is wrong.
I've heard of that problem. I've check that, and it does keep the right time.
Well, what usually happens is as soon as your phone reconnects to the cell network, it will update the date and time.
Uh-huh.
But that is something to make sure of, that your date and time are correct when you are trying to surf web pages.
Yeah, but yeah, it's a 6 year old battery,
mm-hmm.
and of course in nobody lets you replace batteries anymore.
I've noticed. Looked at this unit. It looks like that would be quite the task to even accomplish, and I'm not going to even try that. Okay, well, do you think I should get a another tablet like that, or would you recommend just getting a Chromebook? Or do I know the fence already? You do like Chromebooks a lot, I notice.
I like both, but I'll tell you what. It depends on what you do.
Yeah.
I do a lot of stuff where I need a keyboard.
Uh-huh.
So for me, a Chromebook is a much better choice than a tablet.
Uh-huh.
And I don't really mind carrying it around, and it's not a, you know, it boots up in 8 seconds, so
it's not
a big deal. It's not terribly heavy. I've got a 13.5-inch screen here, which is light enough to carry around. If you're not using a keyboard and you really want something super light, then a tablet is your way to go. But if you find it easier to type than to do that squirrely thing with the keyboard on a screen, then yeah, I would go with a Chromebook.
Uh-huh. Do you like Dell Chromebooks?
I do.
Desktops are Dells, and I've found them to be very reliable. So do you feel the same is true with their Chromebooks?
Yes. I have friends with Dell Chromebooks. I do not own one myself. But I have friends with them, and I have friends who have them, and they love them.
Uh-huh. Okay. Hey, thanks a lot for your time. I love your show. It's on a great station. Good jazz music, too. Thanks for your time.
Thanks. Tell all your friends.
All righty.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I always find it hard to say, what should I buy? Well, your circumstance is going to be far different from my circumstance, and I'm perfectly happy to tell you with what I would do. But, you know, like I said, do you buy a tablet or a Chromebook? Well, I do a great deal of typing.
Well, that's just horrible customer service.
Thank you very much.
I want to talk to your manager.
It all depends on their needs, and that's the biggest thing. It goes back to the days when we tell them about laptops. We've been saying this. You got to go out and test drive and decide what you need. You know, the layout of the keyboards, or like you said, do you need a keyboard, or are you fine with tapping on the screen? Each individual's got to determine their own needs. We can only suggest different options.
Right. There are some things that I find a tablet is fine for, but most of what I do every day is better done with a keyboard. Could I do it with a tablet? Sure. Why? I mean, I'm better off in my case.
And then there's a mix. I have a tablet with a keyboard.
And if you want to go that route, that works too. Yes, absolutely. And that's another choice, and that's a fine choice.
Today is about the only time I actually need my laptop to do a multi-camera video stream.
Right.
I can do a single-camera video stream just fine from my iPad.
Right, that camera, wherever it is.
That's okay. You guys can do
that. Yeah, you're sitting there with nothing.
Yep.
I don't need nothing. I got enough right here.
Yeah, you do.
And that's some of the things we're really excited about, the announcements in iOS 13. In iOS 12, Apple added the Files app, so you can finally see the file system.
You've not been able to see the file system?
For novice users, you go into Pages, and it shows your Pages docs. You go into Keynote, it shows your Keynote docs. So it doesn't show you a folder with 1,000 things in it. I understand the simplicity for those types of people, but for us more powerful users, I wish, there are third-party apps that let you see the file system.
Okay.
So now you can see the file system. In iOS 13... they're putting an SMB client built in.
Ooh.
So now you can connect to file servers anywhere.
Like that.
And they are opening up the USB drive support. So right now you can plug in a USB camera drive and import pictures. They have opened that up. So now you plug in a USB drive and it can see anything and import it anywhere.
Nice. Those are some of the things that shocked me at the latest keynote. I kept thinking, they don't do that? But it's good to see that they're adding it. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Gary from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Gary. What's up?
Hey, how's it going? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I have an issue going on with a memory card, an SD card. Plug it in, it opens up, shows the files. However, if I want to delete a file, I right-click and don't have anything there to show me to delete it. I don't get it. I mean,
yeah. Okay, this is a regular little squarish SD card. Yeah.
Correct.
On the side of that, there is a lock. Check to see that it's.
I thought the lock wouldn't even allow me to open it up.
No, no, no. You can open it up. You just can't change anything. The lock makes it read only, which is what it sounds like you have.
Yeah, I just took it out, and I'm going to move it to the other position.
And that should do it for you. It's the beautiful thing about SD cards is that they are lockable. Back when I was going to people's houses to do the security tango for them, I always had this my stuff on a lockable SD card. You certainly don't. You need to know that it's lockable and unlock it when you need it.
Okay.
And then when you delete something from the SD card, depends. Sometimes it goes in the trash basket.
Right.
And so you have to go to that folder to actually see the things you've deleted.
Right. And that just fixed my problem. I've been pulling my hair out here. I'm going like, why is this not showing a way to delete this?
There you go.
Wow. Okay. But I appreciate the advice. Just give you a heads up. Well, let's see. I'm going back 45 years ago, but I was the Greece Olympia representative back in high school for the beginning of WGMC when we laid the first brick at Athena High School.
Oh, how nice. Very cool is that? Thank you, Gary, for doing that for us. Thank you.
You're very welcome. I came back and did a Sunday morning drum and bugle corps show for a couple hours. Mornings called the Footlifter Scene. Lou Bedstead was general manager, but
yeah.
I went on to try to make a living, and it didn't pan out or anything, and so I chose another profession. But I had a lot of fun, it was really kind of odd. The electronics teacher, I was a member of the AV club at Olympia, and the teacher came across the hall, the electronics teacher, I need a volunteer, and nobody raised their hand, and he picked me and says, come with me, and what did I do? And so, but he talked to me about it, and I said, yeah, let me check it out, and it was a lot of fun putting it together.
Good, excellent. Thank you again, Gary.
You have a great day.
You
have
too.
Day,
keep guys. Smiling. See, it's the alum. It's the alums for the alumni of the radio station.
All right, I got a question here. It just came in. This one's to Steve. Hello, guys. What shop is Steve at? Might bring him a problem. Got an iPad running 10.3.3. Pat tells me software to update. I wasted some time on it. Maybe should pay to have this tutored.
Tutored. Oh, boy, we're going to get tutored.
That works if you're not a dog.
Yeah.
Steve's shop.
I said, used to have links up here. So, I work at Mac Ave. We're an Apple authorized service center and reseller out in Victor on Route 251 between the mall and the village. We're open weekdays is 10 to 6. Saturday is 9 to 1. So Tyler and Jackie have left for the day today. Thanks for covering me for my shift this morning, Tyler.
Yeah.
And so we can handle all your Macintosh needs.
Yep. And so you can give a call on Monday morning.
Yep.
You're right. Somehow the links to are gone. I don't know why. All right. Do we have time? Yeah, we've got.
Well, you don't work anymore, and he's not in the industry anymore.
That's right.
I'm the only one left.
You're the only one left. hold on. We got a whole bunch of people call. Why do people wait until the last minute?
Well, it's the last half hour now, so they're a little early.
Yeah, they're a little early.
They're early for the last minute.
All right, we can take the question, and then we'll take a break.
Gary from Greece, New York. What's up, Gary?
How you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. Did you get any calls in on that Yahoo Mail that it blew out? The Yahoo Mail kind of blew out because Google Chrome updated?
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure that's the reason, but yeah, we that did happen.
Okay, so I just wondered, because I just came in from outside, I'm working around that, you know, and I was just wondering if everybody kind of knew what, you know, you got to go and get the old version of Google Chrome to get back in the Yahoo email.
I so rarely do Yahoo Mail anymore.
Yeah, I know. I got Google, I got Gmail, but, you know, I quit stuff. You always have to have a bunch of email addresses for recovery, you know.
Sure. But you're right. This actually started back in April, I think. I thought it was fixed. That it doesn't work well on a Chrome, and some people say disabling all the extensions helps. Some say it doesn't. Some say it works better in the incognito mode, although I don't know that that's true. But if it works in incognito mode, then you need to get rid of all your cookies and cache data, because Yahoo did have an issue where they screwed up the cache.
Well, what I'm kind of certified like you guys, A, B, C, D, F, G. So I called Yahoo. They gave me the runaround, went into my computer, the whole thing. $179
you
to
did
fix
not,
the problem.
You did not call Yahoo. You called a fake tech support masquerading as Yahoo. You cannot call Yahoo. You cannot call Google. These companies do not make tech support available over phone numbers. Anybody you call is fake, and they're trying to steal your money.
Wow, you're killing me. So I did my own, you know, research and the whole thing, and I came up with SlimJet.com to get the old Google Chrome. I had to uninstall the new Google Chrome and go and get the old Google Chrome. You know, the upgrade was, it just blew it right out. I wouldn't do anything. Yahoo Mail was gone. So I did that, and it's called SlimJet.com to get the old Google Chrome. They load it, and you're good to go.
Okay, thanks. I'm not sure I would do that. I don't know about it.
I wouldn't trust a fake. Yeah, and I wouldn't trust fake tech support.
But thank you. We got
to
take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. And we have Bart from Rochester, New York on the line. Hiya, Bart. What's up?
Hey, I've got the latest Microsoft Office. I have, I'm running Microsoft 10 on a Lenovo machine. Every time I type, I get a formatting mark. You know, it looks like a backwards P.
Oh, yeah.
I can get rid of it just by clicking on Format Text, and it will. I'll do it right now. I click on it. I go to that icon, and it's gone. Do I have to live with that?
No, those are format marks.
And that the backwards P means you started a new paragraph.
Yeah, that means new paragraph, and you can choose to show or not show. These things. So if you are in, if you click on the Office button and then click the Word options, and then click Display, you have a section called Always Show These Formatting Marks on the Screen. and you can pick ones to show or not show. Tab, spaces, paragraph marks, hidden text, optional hyphens.
Okay. Then you can turn them all off if you want.
And you just turn them all off.
Say it again at the beginning.
Are you actually in Microsoft Word itself, or are you at the Microsoft Office?
I'm in Outlook.
No. You're getting these in Outlook, not in Word.
I'm getting it in both.
Okay. They should be the same.
There's in the ribbon.
I know how to get rid of it in Word. I don't use Outlook.
In the ribbon bar at the top, you go to the Home tab, and then the Paragraph group, and there's a little icon that looks like that backwards P, and that's the Show and Hide formatting marks. That may be available in Outlook, because when you're making an email in Outlook, it uses a subset of Word just right inside of Outlook.
So I'm on Outlook right now. Where do I go?
Go to the Home button, go to the Paragraph group, and click on the little paragraph icon to show and hide the paragraph marks.
The Paragraph group has things in it like left justify, right justify.
Indent.
Indent, all of that stuff. You may have, depending on how big your screen is, you may have a drop-down arrow there to see more stuff. And one of the things you should see is that backwards P, the paragraph mark. And that will bring up the little thing that says show and hide the various things.
There's also a keyboard shortcut, Control and Shift and asterisk. And that will turn them on and off as well.
Yeah, okay. So if you just press Control Shift asterisk, which is really Control Shift 8.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Because Shift 8 gives you asterisks.
Right.
All right.
And that should bring up that same screen with the show and hide the various paragraph marks.
I'm on Outlook. I must not be understanding what you're saying.
Or it doesn't work in Outlook and you have to do it in Word itself.
Are you in a message window or are you in the message list?
I'm in the message window.
Right. So
you could type an email right now.
That's right.
Right.
I started to type one.
There should be a format tab.
I'm hitting those marks.
Right. There should be a format tab.
Window in the bottom, everything. I know how to get rid of them, guys.
There's a format tab, the paragraph group, and then click on the hide icon. Or you can use Control, Shift, and asterisk to hide the marks.
Where's the paragraph group?
In the format tab.
All right, hit the format tab.
And there's a group for your paragraph formatting with indent markers, alignment markers, left alignment, center alignment, and that little backwards P for your format symbols.
When I put my cursor on that backward P, here's what I get.
No, sir.
No.
Are you doing the backwards P in the message itself or in the banner at the top?
In the banner.
Okay. Yeah. So you click on that, and what happens?
When I click on that, they go away.
Right. That's what they're supposed to do.
Right.
You click on it again, they'll come back.
Right.
Yes.
If you want to get rid of them permanently, you do that in Microsoft Word.
Yes. How do I get rid of them permanently?
You go into Microsoft Word.
And do the same thing.
And then you can do it from there with that same paragraph tab. In Word, when you click on it, it brings up a list of all of those choices, and you can check the ones you want to see and uncheck the ones you don't want to see.
I can post a link.
He will post a link on our website.
And
hello?
I'm on.
Okay. And then you just follow that link and do what it says on that link. And again, you have to do that in Word, not in Outlook.
Okay, I got you this time.
Okay, so just follow that link. He's posting it on our website. It's soundbites.org. That's bytes with a Y. And that link will be there, and you can follow those instructions and it will show you how to do it.
Thanks an awful lot, guys.
All right, have fun.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Our pleasure. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Yeah, I thought when you turn them on, they stay on, and when you turn them off, they stay off.
Well, theoretically, but it'll work for that
one document.
Document, yeah. For the one email, and then when you open a new one, it goes to the default again, which is on.
Yeah, it must be, yeah.
So it has to turn it off permanently, and then it'll be off. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Tom, what's up?
Hi. Yeah, I'd like to follow up on something we were discussing earlier, you know, about using Chromebooks because they're so relatively less sensitive to picking up viruses and malware, things like that.
Yeah.
So I sometimes go online. I try to look up old manuals for old appliances, even an old, like a 40-year-old garage door opener. And I finally find the document, the PDF typically. But then the only way to open it in that site for some reason is to use a utility that I'm rather skeptical of. I can't give you the name right now, but there's several that are like this, where they're so supposedly free PDF readers. But when I check on other sites to see whether they're safe to open or not, I get a lot of warnings about them, so I don't like to use them for that reason.
Right. Well, that's just an ad for their preferred PDF reader. You can use any PDF reader you want.
And in fact, Chrome has a built-in PDF reader. If you click on that link, it should open it directly in Chrome's own PDF reader, where you can both read it and download it.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. So if you open it in Chrome with a Chromebook, is there any concern about bringing in a virus or malware into the Chromebook that would make it not usable?
There are no viruses that hit Chromebooks right now.
Yeah.
But there can be a Windows virus in a PDF.
Yes.
But it won't affect you because you're on Chrome.
Exactly.
That's what I mean. So don't have to worry about, checking whether that particular reader is or is not a malware or not.
Right.
You can be pretty confident in Chrome that you can open any reader, and it will, at least won't harm the machine you're working with.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Well, that's a good argument for using it, definitely.
Yep. Yep, it is.
All right. Well, thank you.
All right, thanks.
Good show. Thank you.
Thank you. And that's one of the reasons we tell people not to use Adobe's PDF reader. We all know that Adobe products are riddled with insecurities, or unsecurities, or
sounds
I suppose.
Like your name.
And so we try to remind people not to use Adobe products. Don't use Adobe conference. Flash ever. Even Adobe says don't use Adobe Flash.
They are deprecating it and killing it.
They're killing it next year. For those of you who do a lot of Facebook games, sorry.
Yeah. Those games will rewrite themselves in HTML.
Or not.
And one of the dangers with PDF is that when they designed the portable document format, they allow it to contain executable code.
Yes.
So it's not just a text file. It's actually code, and your PDF viewer is interpreting that code. And so the bad guys can write a specially crafted PDF file that has malicious code in it. And when you open the file, the code executes and can infect a Windows system because most of the exploits are for Windows.
Right. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Gates, New York. Hi, Mike. What's up?
I just wanted to get Mr. Enright's opinion on something.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I've got a new computer. It's a laptop. But then one of the reasons I want to have it done is because I'm having medical issues.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to get a Chromebook put on it. It has an AMD 4 gigabyte RAM, 1 terabyte of laptop hard drive.
Okay, so you want to use Chrome the browser?
Yes, I want to. Have them put the Chrome on it.
You can just go to the Chrome website and safely down the Chrome browser, which we highly recommend.
The browser, the whole thing.
Oh, you want to turn your laptop into a Chromebook?
Or do you want to buy a new Chromebook?
Yeah. Do you want to get a new Chromebook?
I want to put a Chromebook on that laptop.
Oh, on that laptop, then you would have to use, what is that?
Neverware.
If you go, Neverware is a website that you can go to. Steve will put up a link that you can download and install that software, and it will turn that laptop into a Chromebook.
Oh, Neverware, huh?
Mm-hmm.
It's neverware.com, and Steve's going to put up a link, and the product is called Cloud Ready.
Okay.
You can install that instead of Windows, and it essentially, and if you've got 4 gigs of RAM, you've got plenty.
Yeah.
To do that with. And so the Cloud Ready Home Edition is free and essentially turns your laptop into a Chromebook. We've seen that put on a lot of older machines, particularly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's certainly works on new ones as well, and it's an excellent product.
And it'll save you a lot of hassles, too, you know, that you won't have to worry about the viruses and the spyware and the malware and everything else, less for you to maintain.
Yeah, well, one of the things is with my issues with the health care, they only give me maybe 1 to 3 years. So
Then I would recommend doing that. Make life a lot simpler for you, sir, and a lot less stressful.
Okay. You've made up a computer for me many years ago.
Well, glad I could do it for you, sir, and I hope you enjoyed every minute that you had it.
Well, before that, I bought as a single parent, I bought the best thing I ever did was an Apple IIe.
Oh, those were great machines.
There you go, yeah.
Those were great machines.
Yeah, bring back memories.
And, he's done very well with that. I had a gentleman living with me that was a contractor, and he seen how well he was doing, and he brought home a CAD information and after he it was an old college thing, and he read it, and he hired a kid while I was in high school.
Nice.
Cool.
Really nice.
Well, thank you for your information. This will be on the website, too?
Yes. Steve has published it.
It'll all be on there, sir.
Okay. Thank you very much for your time. It's very been...
All right. Thank you. Have fun.
Talent over the years.
Thank you so much, Mike. Have fun with your new Chromebook.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, we've had customers come in their 70s and say, I think this is the last computer I'm ever going to buy. And they come back in their 80s and this is the last computer. Then they come back in their 90s. This is going to be the last computer I ever buy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think many people are discovering that if they don't want hassle and they don't want problems and they just want to run their computer every day, that a Chromebook is the way to do it. It's easy, it's fast, and it's convenient. So why not? And that's a thing that not enough people are doing. I got a quick, I think we got time for one more news item. It looks like Apple's relationship with Samsung could be about to become even more strained as Apple reportedly owes Samsung's display business millions of dollars. According to the South Korean ET News, Apple owes hundreds of billions of won, 100 billion won is around $86 million, in penalties for not buying enough OLED screens. Apple allegedly insisted that Samsung Display build a dedicated factory to produce OLED screens, promising orders of 100 million iPhone displays each year. However, sluggish sales of the firm's debut OLED iPhone, the iPhone X, means Apple wasn't buying these displays at the agreed level. ET News estimates the plant is currently working at less than 50% capacity, which tells you how many iPhones are not being sold a year. This in turn caused Samsung Display to suffer a major slump in operating profits. The firm posted a 50% drop in profits from the previous year. The report notes that further irritating Samsung, Apple was quick to slap the firm with a small penalty after some panels produced at the factory suffered manufacturing issues. Apple is unlikely to pay any penalty in cash, but will instead offer Samsung Display additional contracts for OLED panels and new devices as compensation. It is rumored that all of Apple's 2020 iPhones will adopt an OLED screen along with the upcoming 16-inch MacBook. Those are all just rumors. Don't call us about them. So, did you buy a new iPhone, and how do you like the OLED display? Give us a call, 585-9... You have about 4 minutes. 585-966-5299. Yeah.
3 minutes.
3 minutes left. It's a lot of companies would prefer that people don't know how many of anything they actually are selling. Of course, there are two ways you find out. One is during an earnings call with the investors. You do not lie to the investors. That's first.
The SEC gets involved.
Yeah. The SEC, one of the few things that actually will send a corporate person to jail these days, is lying to the investors.
And Elon Musk has also found out that tweeting can get the SEC involved, too. So you don't want to tweet things that may not be entirely accurate.
Exactly. But the other way is to check their suppliers who do report their sales. And they're saying that the Samsung plant that is producing iPhone 10 OLED displays is working at less than 50% capacity, which means that the iPhone sales are at less than 50% of the expected volume. And that's true. We're seeing it all across the industry. People are keeping their phones longer, unless they're running in Dave's issue, which is your battery's dying.
Yeah, this thing.
Or they go for the cheaper phones that have the regular LCDs in them.
Well, and Dave is going to do that. He's talking about getting the Pixel 3A.
Yeah,
I've been lusting after the Pixel 3A XL. That's a separate issue.
There's the one you want, and then there's the one you're going to get.
That's the one I want. I don't need to spend $1,000 for a phone when $400 gives me everything I care about.
And the 3A is the XL.
You're not going to get
which I'd get is the bigger screen. It's a little bit bigger than this one, and
that's $449. So you're going to spend another $50.
You're not going to go for the $2,000 Galaxy Fold.
In a word, oh heck no.
No.
That's not going to happen.
No,
I don't need to spend $2,000 for a phone. I won't spend $2,000 on a laptop. Why am I going to spend $2,000 on a phone?
Yeah, really? Yeah.
It's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous amount. I think $1,000 is a ridiculous amount of money. Get off my lawn. In my day, we had to pick up the phone. Uphill, both ways, in the snow.
And you had that 25-foot
cord.
No,
I remember party lines.
And
most folks don't even know what the heck they're talking about.
You pay extra for that now.
Party line.
Yeah, you had that 25-foot cord because the only phone was in the kitchen.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yep. And you, my parents had an automatic phone answerer. Nick, the phone's ringing.
Yeah.
And we learned early to be polite.
Yeah.
Hi, thanks for calling the Francescos. All right, that's it. We're done. We're done for another week. I don't care what you like.
Happy Epihelion this week.
Happy Epihelion this week. Yep. That's exactly right. And we want to... and don't forget, tomorrow is the free giving away your old electronics. And it's on our website. We're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we will be back in next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member supported Jazz 90.1. It's 5 minutes to the hour, and we are done. See you in 166 hours.